Great Country Q 94. It's Coffee with Kyle, the extended version. And we are going to talk about something. I started watching Presumed Innocent.
Okay.
It's got Jake Gyllenhaal in it.
Oh, it's got to be good then.
It is.
Was he like Spider-Man or something? Or am I thinking somebody else?
Are you thinking Tobey Maguire?
That's who I'm thinking of. Either way. Same person, just spell their name different.
Jake Gyllenhaal's in it. The funny thing is I only got 3.5 episodes in, so I haven't finished it yet. But he is a assistant district attorney in Chicago.
Okay.
Another one of the district attorneys gets murdered.
Okay.
And there is all of this evidence pointing that it was him that did it.
Okay.
And he knows it.
Sure.
As a DA, he's like, all of the evidence is literally going to point to me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do it.
Okay.
But here's the evidence that they are going to use. Here's how they're going to use it in court. And so it's really interesting to watch. And I need to, maybe I'll do that this weekend, break down and buy Apple TV, because that's exactly what I need in my life, is one more streaming service. But either way, it got me thinking. And then I met you on the road once this week.
Yes.
And I said, where are you going?
Yeah.
And you were like, taking some evidence to Madison.
Yeah.
And we've discussed this before, that you sometimes mail evidence.
We do. Yeah.
Which boggled my mind.
Yeah. There's procedures in place that allow for mailing of evidence in.
So it's got to be stuff that can't be tampered with via the mail, right?
Well,
something that can't be shook or...
Well, yeah, I mean, stuff that's not going to be fragile.
All I'm thinking about is
right?
DNA.
Yeah, but the thing is there's tamper-proof tape,
yes,
and ways,
yes,
to package things that are tamper-proof. And so we trust the U.S. Postal Service to handle the packages with care. And, it's not uncommon, honestly.
That just it boggles my mind. When I watch all of the crime shows or whatever, I just imagine people in the suits,
yeah,
gathering all of the evidence, and then it goes to a crime lab.
Well, I mean, just for instance, so, this year we had, I did a press release for a homicide case that we,
yep,
had on Wisconsin Street. The crime lab came to that scene and,
yes,
processed the scene with us.
Yes. This is where I want more.
But the thing is they left all of the evidence with us. They didn't take the evidence with them. They leave it with us, and then we continue to collect evidence through other investigative means, whether it's follow-up interviews during the arrest, those types of things.
Nobody can see my jaws on the floor now.
And then the other thing that people don't realize is, because our crime lab is so overwhelmed with evidence, you are limited with the number of items that you can send per case. And if you want more, you have to request a waiver for their limit on items that you can send. So I think the limit it's either 7 or 10. I can't remember. So you have to pick the most important 10 items and send those for the DNA testing or analysis or whatever you need from those pieces of evidence. And then if you need further analysis, you have to get in touch with the supervisor and get approval for sending more items.
There's so many things that my mind is blown right now. Literally... my mind is blown.
It's one of those things that again, people don't know unless you're in it, right?
Yeah.
And so we have
to... But I feel like I have been lied to.
Well, we have to prioritize those things because the crime lab is so overwhelmed. I mean, they just have so many cases and fewer employees as a sign of our times. Let's go to the nearest small business. They are operating with fewer employees. So is the state crime lab. Yeah, I mean, it's just the reality.
So I guess in my mind, I assumed, again, I've apparently been assuming incorrectly because I have been on a tour of the facility.
Yeah.
I've done this show with you for 5 years. I did the Citizens Academy. I know that you have an evidence room.
Yeah.
I was well aware of that. So I assumed for things your run-of-the-mill drug possession case where, the things that we get press releases,
yep,
that, somebody had a baggie of meth or yep, whatever, that's what gets stored in your evidence locker,
primarily.
But in the case of a homicide where you bring in an outside crime lab. Like, again, the traffic stops, some of the, yep. the drug arrests, that's all you and your officers.
Yep.
You know, you're using only your resources. Bigger issues, you bring in an outside resource, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. So then I assumed that when you bring in the state crime lab, they're like, this is our scene.
No, they're there to assist us.
I just assume they like kind of took over.
Yeah. So the reality is this.
And then they were like, we take everything and we'll tell you what we find.
No. So they'll go to the crime scene. They take a tremendous amount of photographs. They have they have much more advanced photographs.
Yes. I did not mean that as like an insult to your.
I'm not insulted. I'm not insulted.
Department but I also couldn't handle a big.
Yeah, I also have to.
I didn't want that to come off.
I also have to say this is my only experience is in Puerto Sheen. So the Chicago PD probably has their own crime lab, their own crime techs, all those like crime scene technicians. So for us, the crime lab comes to us and says, they help us with like touch DNA. When we say, hey, can we take the doorknob off of the door? Should we send that in for DNA analysis? Their techs are going to tell us. Listen, touch DNA isn't what you think it is. So if there's some like, you know, rough surfaces there or someplace where somebody might have like had to grab onto and like torque on it, you might have some touch DNA. But just opening up a doorway, that's difficult to, you know, get a DNA analysis off. Could they do it? Sure, they could do it. But they're looking for the items that are going to be more likely to have that evidentiary
like a
value.
Toothbrush.
A toothbrush or a knife or a hammer or something along those lines where you know that somebody is, that's the weapon used, there's blood splatter on it, we're going to be able to analyze that for DNA. And so they really walk us through those crime scenes to say, yes, take this, no, don't take that, that's not a value, this is a value. And, you know, talk about physics of things and, you know, just kind of break it down a little bit better for us so we're taking the right items and testing the right items and prioritizing those items that need to go for testing. So, and packaging is a huge deal as well. They assist us with how to package, what to package, in what type of container, because some things you don't package in plastic, some things you don't package in paper, some things you, you know, package in plastic cylinders, some things you package in cardboard boxes.
And well, this goes back to the mailing, and when I said, you know, get tampered or contaminated, that's in my head, like, well, how do you know that it's going to survive the transport?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's certain parameters that we meet, right?
Okay.
And it's not, you know,
this is why we do this show.
I've been on crime scenes where we've cut out like entire sections of carpet.
Yeah. I see that all the time.
Yeah. That's not something that we would send to the crime lab. In fact, our evidence room right now has entire sections of carpet in that. And we store that and we save it until the case is completely adjudicated.
So. Why wouldn't you send that to the crime lab?
Well, I mean, we wouldn't mail it to the crime lab. That's something that we would transport. Yep.
You did say you were transporting physical evidence.
Yes.
Instead of mailing it.
I was also picking up a bunch of digital evidence from a child pornography case from this summer as well. So
okay.
Yep.
So
we try to kill as many birds with one stone of a trip to Madison. It's not, you know, it's I was bringing 10 items of evidence and picking up a bunch of items downtown, right on the Capitol Square from the Risser Center is what it's called downtown.
So you talk about, you know, the crime lab being short-staffed and you can only send, you know, so many pieces of evidence. So how does that then impact when you are trying to work a case?
Yeah, so I'll kind of take a couple steps back. The vast majority of the evidence that we take in never gets tested. It never goes to the crime lab. It never sees a you know, criminal analysis.
It sits in that.
Sits in the storage room.
Yeah.
Yep.
It smells like drugs.
Yes. So the vast majority of it never gets tested. What'll prompt testing is if somebody pleads not guilty and there's a trial date set.
Okay.
So the very first thing that happens anytime we bring evidence to the crime lab is they pull up Wisconsin Circuit Court access and they find out if there's a trial date set. If there's not a trial date set, they're probably not going to accept it because they have
a bajillion other things.
18,000 other cities in Wisconsin that have evidence that are going to prompt some type of exigency on their part when there's a trial date set. So if there's not a trial date set, they're probably not going to test it. They're going to say, hold on to this until there's a trial date set. Once there's a trial date set, Then we put it on the table of a tech, and they are prompted to test that immediately because we have a trial date set. If you don't have a trial date set, they're not going to test it.
So how does that work? Again, sorry to interrupt you, but as you're looking at a case going, well, do we want to take this to trial?
Yeah, well, I mean, for us.
And then you don't know if you have the evidence.
Yeah, for us, it's not really our decision.
No, I know.
But, the thing is the other part is this is unique. So if there's we'll talk in, I think it's Juneau County. They had a triple homicide recently, right? So cases like that are going to take a different precedent. So if you're trying to identify a suspect or establish probable cause to arrest somebody, the state crime lab is going to bump that ahead to say, all right, we have this physical evidence on scene. There's three dead people. We need to test this immediately to get a profile of a DNA or to match that, you know, defendant.
So, yes.
They are hoping, though, that you have a bunch of other evidence that can tie that person to it so they don't have to go from Juneau County to Madison, test that within 24 hours, and get that result back. They're hoping that you have cell phone data, admissions, witness statements, those types of things that are going to be able to build that probable cause prior to them moving all of the other cases in Wisconsin to the side and testing your case.
Yes. But still, I know that this falls on the DA.
Yeah.
But I would assume that having a backlog like that and not knowing, do I have enough evidence?
Yeah.
And
it comes down to communication. It comes down to the DA's office communicating with the state crime lab and saying, I need these for prosecution purposes to move forward with the case, and they'll move it up in priority.
Okay. I was wondering if there was just a whole bunch of, like, we're in limbo waiting on this.
Not a lot. No, not really. You know, there are times where we'll call them and say, hey, have you gotten a result on this yet? And they're really good about being responsive and saying, yeah, we'll put it on the text, you know, desk today and do it. I don't think you've ever toured the crime lab, right?
No.
We never talked about that. I had an opportunity to take a high school class.
I did way back in high school.
The Iowa one?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Wisconsin one, I took a forensics class, evidence class from Prairie du Chien High School on a tour. Oh, this has probably been 8 years ago now.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a crime lab or what it was. There was a dead body.
It was probably cadaver lab.
I feel like we did a crime lab too. I don't know. That was 20 some years ago.
Yeah, it's not nearly as exciting as it's a lot of laboratory. I mean,
it's
that's what it is.
CSI, is that what you're telling me?
Maybe. I don't know. I've never watched CSI, to be all honest with you. I've never watched the show. Never will, and have no interest in it. But it's just a lot of science laboratories is what it is. And the other thing is they have
a lot of actual science being used.
Well, the other thing is they have a check and a double check. So if you're the tech that tests the DNA and says this is the DNA profile, I'm the person that then retests what you just tested to make sure that you did everything that you're supposed to, and we have a matching agreement on what it is. So it's not just some Joe Schmo sitting at his counter saying, yep, I think it's this person. There's also processes in place to make sure that his work is accurate and that it's, you know, they're coming to the same conclusion.
There's so much, like I said, jokingly, actual science.
Yeah.
But I mean, forensic science is far more than just...
Well, there's not cops that get hired at the crime lab.
No.
They're all like biology legit, majors,
yes,
chemistry majors.
Say.
Yeah.
Legit science.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. I say this as my child is going to major in chemistry.
But she has a...
There she goes. She can go work in a crime lab.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And there's a huge demand for it, too. I mean, there just is. There's a huge demand for people like that.
Well, clearly, because, I mean, it's something that is very detail-driven.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, I've said this before on the show, not very many people get to testify in court in their lives, right?
No.
Crime lab techs can make or break a case, and their expertise and their ability to explain to 12 people what their job entails and what it doesn't, more importantly. Like, a lot of times you'll see national headlines of these court trials and the jury is like looking for that CSI moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not every case has that CSI moment, but because people are so trained to watching a 60-minute TV show and believing that there's this magic spatter of blood and there's this magic piece of evidence, that doesn't always exist. And so the ability for that tech to take the stand and say, here's why we didn't collect this, and there's going to be a defense attorney that's going to say, you should have collected that door handle because 14 people walked into that door. And the ability for that tech to say, well, listen, because there was 14 people through that door, touch DNA just isn't there to, you know, break down each one of those profiles. But the defense attorney is going to make a 12-person jury believe that there was, you know, some type of reason why they should have and they didn't and they chose not to because they already had their mindset on their defendant or whatever. So it's just, it's one of those high stress jobs that not very many people want. And, you know, it takes a certain level of expertise and schooling to get qualified for that.
Well, and I think another thing that I mean, can be used in a trial is like the amount of experts that get brought in.
Sure.
That, you know, blood spatter expert and the physics of it. Yep. And, you know, well, you can determine so much about a crime scene when you bring in, like, well, they had to be standing at this angle. You know, if you're, you know, talking about like a stabbing or a shooting, like the way the bullet moved through the body, they were standing at this angle. So, you know, they're left-handed, so they couldn't be at that angle. You know, it can't be a suicide. That is always fascinating to me, how the science can be determined after an event, like recreating it.
Yeah, so you mentioned experts. For every expert, there is somebody who will testify against that expert and disprove what that expert is testifying
to. Exactly, that's what I was going to say.
So, you know, there's that dynamic. The other really important piece that we've dealt with a number of cases in the last year or so is pathologists and autopsy results.
That's what's going to make me.
If you've never attended an autopsy, it is critically interesting. And the people who do them are trained
Fun
beyond.
Fact, that's what I wanted to be for like a semester in high school when I took a criminology class.
Yeah.
And the only time I've ever fainted was when we went to the cadaver lab and I smelled that and I was like, I think I need to leave the room before I fainted.
Yeah.
But so, I like kind of like clumped to the side.
The pathologists that do that work are tremendously brilliant. Just in their.
Are you saying I wasn't brilliant?
No. I'm just saying they have training beyond an MD, like a medical doctor.
It was so fascinating to me.
Yeah. And that's another really sought after position. Not a lot of people want to do for obvious reasons, right?
Yeah, nobody wants to spend their day around dead bodies.
But if you're thinking of like, well, I don't want to go to school for another 12 years to be an MD, well, their schooling is even beyond that. So, I mean, it's...
If you want to be an MD and get more schooling and not deal with alive people...
Yeah, you can do pathology work. But again, it's one of those fascinating things that a position that we'll rely on for a couple trials coming up, so...
And it's interesting because they can, again, to me, tell so much about a crime and how it happened without being there.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of knowledge that they possess and the science that they can determine is mind-boggling to me. And I guess part of me is like, is it glamorized in CSI and Hollywood and, you know, the books I read? Or is that really how it is in real life?
Yeah, I think it's glamorized a little bit. I haven't seen a pathologist under the age of 50, to be quite honest with you. So if you're watching a bunch of CSIs and there's like a 22-year-old, you know, punk kid doing an autopsy, probably not existing. You know, there's like...
You haven't even got through undergrad.
There's students and stuff that are, you know, attend those things. But yeah, it's just an interesting dynamic. The other... Pathologists are unique people. And I've seen a few of them testify, and I watched one guy early in my career just walked circles around a defense attorney once, and the defense attorney was trying to challenge him, and he was kind of well known for his work. He's since passed away, but he made that defense attorney look like he should have gone back to law school. It was amazing, and the defense attorney tried and tried and tried, and he just walked circles around him because he was an expert. He knew what he was talking about, and there was no other definitive way that this, you know, transpired the way that the defense attorney tried to get it to be. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I'll never forget that testimony and his command and control of his testimony was just, there was no
uncertainty. It was
not
his first time testifying either.
And there was no uncertainty anywhere in his voice. He knew what he was doing was right. He knew the conclusions that he came to were right. And there was no way that anybody was ever going to convince him differently because he was so, just such an expert in the field.
I'm going to ask you a question. I should have maybe prepared you for this, but has there ever been a time in your career, you've been a cop now for what, 20?
Yeah, 20 years? Some years.
Where you thought, I have every piece of evidence. There is no way that we are not going to get a conviction. And then something happened in the trial with either an expert or something, and you were like, oh, what?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't have a plethora of a bunch of really complicated cases that I've worked. I mean, I've testified at homicide hearings and those types of things. So I guess that might be the most thing. But I never lost a jury trial until I became chief of police. My first jury trial as a chief, I was actually sergeant when I handled the case, but I became chief in the meantime. And that was a disorderly conduct child abuse case that was tried by a jury, and the jury found him not guilty. And all of the jury trials prior to that, honestly, I was like, why are we even here? This is a slam dunk. And again, I won them all, like all those jury trials. I like jury trials. Even the one that I lost, I enjoyed that experience because it was a unique experience. Again, not many people get to testify in court. And
I know.
And so I respect the court system and I respect juries' decisions. And I think that we, although not perfect, we have the best criminal justice system in the world. And so, no, I can't really, nothing comes to mind. I think that we have some significant trials that are scheduled right now that are on their way to a trial. I don't know that they'll, you know, end up that way, but I'm confident in our abilities to be able to prove these cases too. So,
I mean, I guess this might be, and I don't know if you can answer this, but are there cases where you've like, I wish that would have gone to trial instead of pleading out because we had the evidence?
Well, here's another unique thing is not all the facts come out at trial. There's a lot of things that are withheld from juries that, you know, they don't hear at trial for a number of different reasons, whether the defense and prosecution agree to terms that, you know, we're not going to bring that up, or maybe the judge suppresses that evidence and says you can't talk about that evidence at trial because of X, Y, and Z purposes, right? And there's other times where I've been on a jury or I've been at a jury trial and been a cop and been like, why don't you talk about this? Why don't you bring this up? This is really important in this case. And we still won without that information. But I wish that the jury would have heard that information. So there's times where juries find a conviction and find people guilty, and in the back of my mind I'm like, gosh, if they would have only knew this, they would have convicted him so much faster, you know. But you know, it's just one of those things. But again, jury trials are they're important. That is an important piece of our criminal justice system, that you can be judged by 12 people of your peers, and they can hand down a verdict, and you know, you have to agree with it whether you win or lose. It is what it is.
And I'm going to go back, kind of switch gears a little bit, because I know we've had this conversation so many times before, but I feel like it continually gets lost in how people perceive what is the daily life of a police officer.
Yeah.
I think we, as a general public, think, oh, police officers, they're out driving around in their patrol cars. They're looking for people speeding.
Yeah.
And then they respond to calls, right?
Yeah.
That's, I think everybody just, you know, from the time we're little kids.
Right.
Because that's how we see.
That's how we see it,
yeah. Not everybody gets the opportunity to sit down and, you know, pepper a police chief weekly with their random questions that pop into their mind. So, again, your office and your officers spend, I would guess, a vast majority of their office time working on cases that maybe happened months ago.
Yeah, for sure. So,
like, once somebody is arrested and put in the back seat of that car and taken to the jail, that is when the work begins.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll touch on this in a couple different Avenue. So this past week, I worked a traffic shift. I was on a traffic stop in front of a business here in town, and somebody that came out of the business yelled some expletives at me and called me some choice words. They weren't even involved in the traffic stop. But what they said leads me to believe that they have a misconception of what police actually do.
And clearly so, not listening to our show.
Well, that's okay. We're not going to win everybody. And so I, after 20 years of doing this, they needed to come up with some new ways to hurt my feelings, I guess. But
you got some thick skin after 20 years.
Well, it's just one of those things. I'm like, really? Come on. And the person
you
I stopped.
You can't get any better than this?
Yeah. Well, no, it's just not even that. It's just like, it's just silliness. So back to the point. You know, some of the incidents that have occurred over the last year are pretty significant incidents. And I had, we had one case where I came in 28 hours after it occurred, and the people that were initially called for that were still at work.
Yeah.
They had worked 28 hours straight trying to loosen up all the loose ends and tighten up all the loose ends and make sure things were in line. When they finally went home and slept, they came back to work and worked on that same case again. And, you know, worked on it for several days up into, you know, they're still gathering evidence. They're still getting evidence results. They're still talking to witnesses. They're still taking statements from people. They're still gathering cell phone pictures and video of the incidents and those types of things. That lasts weeks, sometimes even months down the road of following
years.
Up with.
Yeah, it could be years sometime.
You know, I've talked about this on air as well, the Shannon Fisher homicide that I was a small portion of. There were others that had a lot more to do with that. That was a 4 to 6 year investigation of witness statements, you know, evidence collection, canvases, searches, affidavits and search warrants for electronic devices and phone records and just a multitude of efforts to try to bring that case to a resolution. And then when the suspect came in and admitted to it, then it all started up again. And we had another months long investigation of corroborating what he had told us, which we had kind of had enough corroboration in the early stages of that investigation. And you know, we could write a book about that case and the dynamics that were involved in that case. But, yeah, it's just one of those things that although we do have officers that go out and write traffic tickets, that's a very small portion of what their job is. The vast majority of their job happens in the office of documentation of and collection of evidence and, you know, proving what we're trying to hold people accountable to.
And definitely, I feel like you are always looking to see the bigger picture, you know, find out what really happened here.
Well, I think the biggest role of any type of law enforcement agency is to find answers for the victims and victims, including
saying.
The people who are deceased, as well as their descendants that survived, you know? And so we don't want to stop until that happens, right?
Well,
we want to get
thinking,
a full
like
picture so we can give the family a good representation of what happened.
I'm thinking like, okay, you have a traffic stop and you pull over somebody and, you know, I mean, it's not uncommon. They have some sort of drug with them.
Sure.
So clearly, you know, you're taking them in, whatever. But I feel like also your officers probably aren't going to stop with, okay, we're going to, you know, charge them with XYZ. It's like, well, wait. Okay, but where were those drugs coming from?
Yep.
Where were they going?
Yeah.
Is this just a personal use?
Yep.
Is this a, you know, they were taking them somewhere? What, like, that's what I'm saying is,
yep.
I have a feeling that your officer doesn't stop and say, well, we charged you.
Yeah,
enjoy enjoy that process. We're done talking to you. That was fun.
Yeah, there are circumstances where it goes really short because the defendant says, I'm not going to speak to
exactly.
you. And so that's kind of a, you know, all right.
Okay. Well.
But there are other circumstances where we're like, hey, you know, where did you get this from? And then we build on that. And that sometimes takes, I mean, I've been involved in investigations that are 6 to 10 to 12 months
long.
Well,
I mean, you know, there was the one instance in, you know, the Citizens Academy that got talked about at length that, you know, it started as a very routine.
Yeah, it was just a contact in the middle of the night and got somebody with like $10 worth of weed. And it turned into a multi-million-dollar drug trafficking.
Yeah. So. And so I feel like, again, I don't want to like inflate your ego here.
Well, I have very little to do with it, to be quite honest with you. I'm just the chief. There's people that actually do work at my office.
Yeah, you just come talk on the radio.
I mean, drink coffee and come talk to Lori, yeah.
But it is funny, you know, I bring this up multiple times too, is, you know, I was familiar with somebody in Iowa who her husband was murdered and everybody just assumed it was her. And I kept texting you about this stuff. And, you know, when something would come out, you'd be like, yep, that X, Y, Z, this and X, Y, Z, this. And it was incredible that everything you told me went along with what finally came out.
Yeah.
And I think her trial is coming up.
Well, I've talked to you about this as well, and we've shared Netflix series on serial killers.
Yes.
And I just don't think that can exist today because of technology and people's dependency on technology. And you're referencing a case that really came down to technology
and people's
digital footprint. I mean, that's just the reality.
It was so funny because I remember you saying, Snapchat is one of the easiest social media. They're very easy to get information from.
Now they are, yeah. There were years where they weren't, but now they are very, very easy to get information from.
Yeah, and this case came down to Snapchat records, and I'm like, oh, man.
And this is one of hundreds and hundreds of cases that are going to be dependent on people's digital imprint, and that's just how it is.
Well, okay, I will ask you this then. As technology continues to improve and we have a digital footprint, you see the guy in Utah murdered those college kids.
Yep.
You know, they were able to pinpoint, you know, they by cell phone pings as to where he was.
Yep. And if you remember, he was a criminology major.
Yes.
And I think he was a doctorate or a
graduate PhD degree or something. Yeah. Was getting his PhD and writing his thesis on all this stuff. And so I'm like, we've almost come to a point where the technology is outsmarting humans.
Well, I think our dependency on technology is going to be the downfall to criminals being able to get away with things. And is that a good thing? Probably, right? But at the same time, I think there's still that perfect crime out there if somebody really took the time to focus on the things that we're focusing on talking about.
Yeah. We're not encouraging it.
It could happen. and it could be really frustrating from a law enforcement standpoint to say, let's try this angle, dead end. Let's try this angle, dead end. It could be a long road.
I mean, it is interesting because, so that was a criminology major. I also have watched a lot of, documentaries about, crooked cops.
Oh, sure.
And how, you know, even the show that I was talking about, Presumed Innocent, he's a DA. He knows everything that they're going to use against him. Is a DA the perfect person to commit a crime or a cop because they know exactly how it's going to be investigated?
Yeah, I don't know.
Think of the Karen Reed trial.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to mention that.
That's in my head.
That trial's so convoluted with people who, first off, shouldn't testify. They shouldn't even be able to take the stand to testify because they have zero credibility. Zero.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we'll ever know what happened with that case.
I don't think so. It is wild. And that's another one where you have experts in saying, no, you're wrong, and this is why this is right, or no, it's absolutely not possible that glass was there.
Yep.
And it's so crazy because that is an instance, too, where technology and, you know, the growth of technology hasn't helped solve the case.
Yeah, I want to know the amount of money spent on both sides. I want to know the amount of money the prosecution has spent to prove that case, and I want to know the amount of money the defense has soaked into that case. Because it's well over several years of my salary, I guarantee.
I think it's both of our lifetime salaries.
That's crazy.
I mean, it is crazy. And then it ends in a mistrial?
Yeah. I think I can't remember. I haven't followed it in the last couple of weeks.
I didn't follow it after the mistrial, but is it going back?
I think they're trying to refile, but one of the major investigators is going through some personnel issues at, I think it's the Massachusetts State Police. And so I think they're kind of waiting for that to all work itself out to see if he can even take the stand again. So,
yeah, I mean, it's just the whole thing is very fascinating because, again, you have law enforcement heavily involved.
Yes. Yep.
You know, the whole, that one is a fascinating case to me. I can't wait for all of the Netflix documentaries on that one.
The few news things that I've watched on that, like the 48 hours or 60 minutes things, I scratch my head at, because I'm like, how in the world did you ever think you were going to get away with this? If what they say is true, how did you ever think that this was, you were going to convince 12 people of this?
And I think it's so interesting that her immediate reaction was that it was her, but she had no memory of it.
Yeah. I don't know. If people are following that, it's a mind-blowing case.
It is. I don't know. Mind-blowing. So can't wait for some documentaries on that one.
Yeah.
Either way, I don't know if we really solved anything, but I do now know that the crime lab doesn't just take everything, and that kind of boggles my mind still. Like, yeah. I just imagine they were like, this is ours. Back off.
No.
We will give you what you need to know.
No, they're there to assist us, and they do a really good job.
Yeah, I mean, apparently if you're good at chemistry or biology,
there's a future for you in the crime lab world.
There's a future for you in the crime lab world, and Kyle will mail you packages.
I actually had a gal reach out to me that was a biology major, and she said, I'm interested in doing this. And so I reached out to the crime lab, the lady who runs the crime lab, and they have a whole recruiting section now.
Wow.
And so we linked her
up. Helping change lives.
Well, I don't know if she works there or not. I have no idea, but I at least connected the two to hopefully get a young gal a job and get the crime lab wait times reduced.
Yeah. It's Coffee with Kyle, the extended version. This was a good one. I felt like I learned something today.
There you go.
I hope everybody else did too. It's Coffee with Kyle with Prairie du Chien Police Chief Kyle Tienor, the extended version from Dunkin' Donuts in Prairie du Chien.